shift your mind to expect that tonight's going to be significant for you. It's not just Sid's going to get up here and teach for an hour, and I might hear a couple comments, and you know, Lee or Lori will say something good and all that stuff. But I'm going to have a God encounter tonight. You know, I need a God encounter tonight, Wanda. I need that to come alive in me. And so, you know, I just come in with that. So let's just begin to shift our heart. Let's shift our mind. God, we are here for you. We are not here for the social aspect. We're not here out of duty. We're not here for each other. We are here to encounter you, Father. And in that, it'll be a great, great culture. And in that, it's going to be a great community. And in that, it's going to be a ministry and a flowing between each other and the brotherhood and all of these awesome things. But ultimately, we're here for you tonight. I came to encounter you, God. I came to let my attentive ear be worshiped towards you. My heart and my face positioned and turned toward you, that's my worship tonight, Father. That's my song tonight. That's my all tonight, is that I check everything that would come against my full attention, my full devotion, my full passion. I check it outside, and I don't allow it to come into this place. Because God, I want it all or nothing tonight with you. And Lord, I pray that as we come in and we dive into your word, that it would do what you created it and you designed it to do, and that's to penetrate the depths of our heart. Lord, that you desire to come in and deep call out to deep tonight. I'd come against anything that would be superficial. I come against anything that would be either appealing or offensive to the flesh. And I just cry out for our spirit man to be fully focused and devoted and full face towards you. And I pray that we would just have an amazing night of intimacy with you, Father. And Holy Spirit, just do what only you can do in each of our lives. You know what needs to be done in us. And you see us rightly. And Lord, I just pray that you would just do that work. And we love you, we lift you up, we exalt you tonight, Father. It's in Jesus' sweet and holy name. We ask these things, we believe these things, we declare these things over our lives. Amen and amen. Yeah, come on. Come on. Anybody with me tonight? I just need a couple folks to want to go there with me tonight. Y'all turn in your Bible to Genesis chapter 1, Genesis 1. I got my notebook out and I was wanting to write a note. Usually I'll write 2 or 3 pages of notes on stuff, and God wouldn't let me write anything in my notebook this afternoon. It was kind of frustrating, I'll be honest with you. Finally he said, just put your pen down. I'll let you write a little bit in your Bible. I wrote a little bit in my Bible, but, he wouldn't let me do that. I'm not sure why, but we'll see. As we were getting ready for baby dedication this past Sunday with Ashley's precious little baby, I was spending some time while we were in Italy just contemplating and meditating on it and seeing what the Lord wanted to say to her and about her and all of this. And he began to speak to me and gave me some things. And if you were here Sunday was just so sweet and so precious. Man, I really felt like that God breathed on Sunday morning, and I saw the impact in a lot of people. Now, what they do with it is up to them, but I saw God really just impacting a lot of people just from His presence. That's all we want, is His presence over everything else. One of the core values I heard Jeremy Riddle teaching earlier this year, and he was talking about the core values of the community at Bethel, and he said that the first and foremost number one core value is presence over everything else and no compromise in that. His presence over everything else and no compromise over that. And I want to tell you something, when His presence is manifesting in my life and it's ruling and reigning in my life, then that's what makes this great. I have people all the time recently, because we just celebrated 35 years of marriage together, and I have people and they're like, wow, that's quite an accomplishment, you know. And I've even had well-meaning people say, I know you work real hard at your marriage. I have. I mean, I have some real well-meaning people that have, you know, they've texted me that and told me that. I know you worked real hard at your marriage. Congratulations. Like, you've done it on this accomplishment. And I don't feel like I've done any kind of accomplishment. And in a loving way, I've kind of rebuked them and said, I don't work at my marriage. I don't. I invest in my marriage. But I don't work at my, we don't work at our marriage. I invest in it. I give myself totally to it. And I host His presence in it. And when I host His presence in it, and I give myself totally to it, then it works itself. And it becomes glorious in itself. And I want us to get out of this performance mindset in our faith that it's not something that we have to work at. It's not something that we have to work up. It's simply something that we have to host and give ourselves to. Because I want to tell you something, guys. When we come in with this thing and we have the mindset that I've got to work at this real hard and I got to try to get it right and do it, we're going to utterly fail because we are human. Even though, man, we are kings and we are priests and we are walking before God and all that stuff, our performance is still going to come short of what adoption, sonship's royal bloodline is going to bring us into. Because at my best on my labors, I'm going to fail in that. And a lot of times we get tripped up and we stumble and we fall because the enemy comes in and throws condemnation on us because we're not doing it good enough. We're not doing it hard enough. We're not doing it passionate enough. We're not being disciplined enough. We're not devoted enough. And God said, it is simply about you hosting my presence in your life. And when you do that rightly and give yourself totally to that, everything else is going to take care of itself. It's not a discipline thing that I've got to come in and I've got to spend X amount of hours with God. It's the thing where I naturally find myself wanting to spend time with Him and in His presence. I came home from work this afternoon. I told Lori, I said, I'm driving to Fitzgerald in the morning. I'm going picking up a new trailer for work. You know, we're getting a gooseneck flatbed and all that. And, you know, Fitzgerald's about 3 hours. It's about 20 minutes away from there. So it's about 3 hours and 20 minutes. So you're talking about an 8 hour loop. Anybody enjoy an 8 hour loop in a car? No. You know what she said? She said, I'll go with you. I mean, I expect Purdy to want to go with me. But she said, I'll go with you. And I'm like, I'm just driving down there and getting a trailer. And all. She said, I'll go. She said, can we go the back way through the cotton fields around Camilla and all that stuff? I said, yeah, I don't care. I'll even take you to Starbucks and Chick-fil-A. But that said something to me. That's that reward, Starbucks and Chick-fil-A. But that said something to me. She just wants to be with me. Doesn't matter what we're doing. Say that it's not, there ain't nothing grand about going and picking up a trailer and Fitzgerald, Georgia. But she wants to go because she loves my presence. And that's the ultimate of where we want to get to in our hunger and our relationship with Him. And so I look in this in Genesis, and there's some powerful stuff that God spoke to me in Genesis 1, and I can't get away from it. I'm learning, slowly but surely, as I get old, I'm learning that when God gives me a word and speaks a word to me on something, not to rush through it. And if I need to, brother, if I need to camp out on that word for a month so that He can fully develop it, then I need to slow my roll a little bit and quit going to the new thing, the next fresh thing. We want to come in here every Sunday and God give us another word and we need to develop the one He gave us 3 weeks ago. I just need something new. I need something fresh. Give me a fresh word, brother. Really saying, stimulate me and tickle my ear. And the last time I see somebody in the Bible stimulating something and not reproducing something, God struck him dead. And so I want us to come in and spend the proper time as God gives us these nudges, as God gives us these whispers, as God speaks these things to us. I want us to give them proper place and I want us to pause and get into a contemplative state. You know what the word said when the angel came to Mary and told her that she was going to be impregnated by the Holy Spirit and she was going to birth the Messiah? It said she pondered these things in her heart. We don't know how to do that. We want to be told what to do, and we want to be entertained. But it said she pondered, James said she pondered this in her heart. And we've got, if we want to mature and get this thing right and grow into a place of depth, then we've got to be people that are contemplative in the things that God speaks to us and the things that God shows us and the words that He says to us to let it fully develop. And we fail in letting it fully develop. We don't let it come to a place of maturation in not only what it's designed to do, but in the way we see it. Because until I rightly see it, I won't understand it. Until I rightly see you, I won't understand you. Until I rightly see Him, I won't understand Him and know Him. And until I rightly see myself, I will never be able to walk this Christian journey out. That's one of my big things with you guys, man. I love y'all so much, but I want y'all to rightly see who you are. Rightly see who you are. Man, because I don't look at y'all and say, man, what in the crap are you doing in a Blake house, dude? You got a college degree. You got a family. You got this. You just, I don't see any of that. All I see is brothers just like me, man. And we're walking through this journey and we stump our toes sometimes and we stumble and we fall sometimes. And maybe we fall two or three times. I can't tell y'all how many times I fail. It might not look like what you fell in, but I fell in something else. Jesus didn't come in and scold the ones that were caught up in sin. He scolded the religious people. That's the ones He ripped in you and in. He said, because y'all think y'all got it going on. You think you got it going on and you are so far from me. He says, man, I want some diligent seekers. And God's going to meet us in these places. So we've got to rightly see this. I do want to read one thing out of my notebook, but it's something that I wrote in January. God spoke to me and He said, 2018 will be a year where secret things are revealed to us. Many around us won't hear it or see it. Our faith man's response is crucial. And when I wrote that, in my mind's eye, and what I really thought that was God was going to come in and He was going to speak all these whispers to me. And He does. But I believe a big part of this on God revealing secret things to us is not that He's going to whisper something new or give us some revelation. Because when I wrote that, He's going to reveal secret things. I mean, y'all know what a secret is? He comes up and He tells you something you had never heard before. He tells you something that nobody else maybe is hearing and all of that stuff. But I believe His revealing of the secret things, a big part of this is us stopping in a contemplative state, seeing what He is doing in our life, in the life of others. And when we rightly see it, you know what that is? That's a secret thing that we wouldn't have seen before. I promise you, I see things as an adult that my children did not see when we traveled. Because me and Lori, man, we'd just be blown away, you know, with the scenery. We'd be sitting here and we'd be like, oh, look how beautiful those trees are. That's amazing. Look at the aspens and look at those maples and all that. And they'll be like, mm-hmm. I'm like, did you see it? Mm-hmm. I saw it for 1.6 seconds. You know, me and Lori's pulling a wreck in the car because we're just like, oh, man, look at that river. I can sit there and just stare at a river. There's something about moving water. I can just sit there and just, that's why I like to fly fish so good. I don't care anything about fly fishing in the ocean. I have tried to like it, and I can't like it. You know, I don't catch much because I'm not good in the ocean, but I can catch stuff in the river. There's something about moving around. But what I'm saying in this is we look at things in a contemplative state and allow God to speak to us through what we see. Then He's revealing secret stuff to us. I want y'all to slow down a little bit as y'all walk through this house. Walk through, y'all heard this phrase, walk through the room slowly and see what God's doing in people's lives. If you'll slow down, He'll show you stuff you didn't see. If you slow down, He'll show you stuff that needs attention. If you slow down, He might give you a word for that person because you might see something on their countenance that you normally didn't see because you're too busy doing your thing. coming and going and all of that. You know, typically with church, we get here 5 minutes late and we bust the door out and say, well, so-and-so, I don't know, I didn't even see him. You know, what's your rush? Slow down. I know where you're going to lead it. Ain't that good? What's the rush? What is the rush? And as we slow down in this, I want y'all to do something Sunday. I want you to do it for not just Sunday, but for a little bit of a period of time. I want you just to slow down enough and watch what God is doing in Madeline and Noah Segal right now. I'm getting trashed more in worship over that than I am anything. Slow down just long enough to see what God's doing in just those two kids. Slow down in a contemplative state enough to see these little old posse of kids in here. Some of them's my grandkids and Isabel and all of these other little old kids down here that just run around and gravitate. Slow down in a baptism service long enough to watch 20 kids lined up on the altar glued to what's happening in that baptismal pool. And God will speak secret things to you when you slow down and see that. But usually we're blind because we don't walk through in a contemplative state. I want to show you another angle on this. Let's get in Genesis and let's read a little bit, because y'all need to read some scripture so we can say we got a little Jesus in us tonight. All right, verse 1. Y'all ready? Is everybody there? Did I ask y'all to go to Genesis 1? All right, that's not hard to find. We can do that. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. I want to stop right here because we're going to read on several verses on this. I preached in error for a long time concerning this. Because I have preached for years and years and years and years that God saw this, and God said that it was good. I came in and I'm like, man, you know, and I don't know, man, I was blind because I didn't see what it really said. But I came in and it was like, God was like, that's good. He said that it was good. He declared that it was good. And there's seven different occasions in chapter 1 of Genesis where God comes in and something is declared good, but he didn't say it was good. He saw that it was good. And the word that I had for Ashley and her husband on Sunday morning, part of the word was to stop long enough in the process, in the journey of raising her up, Mabry up, and see the goodness in all of these stages, instead of wishing I could get to a expected end. You see, what the church has done on many levels, but what the church has done, the church has come in and said, heaven is the goal, and heaven is glorious, and let's see heaven, let's talk about heaven, let's read about heaven as much as we can. Let's come in and let's sing songs about heaven. But we have failed to stop and look at the journey of life in a contemplative state and see the goodness of the journey that we're on. One of my big goals right now is to get Christians to quit enduring the process and start embracing the process, and not only embracing the process, but celebrating the process. That's why I love artisan stuff. I love artisan stuff. It doesn't matter what it is, man. I absolutely love it. Because I come in and it stirs me. You know, man, I'll come in and I'll find out about making olive oil and it stirs me. This is the way we do it, and this is the way we properly do it, and these are the processes that it goes through. I love the whole winemaking process. It's fascinating to me. This is the way we do it. And we start with this fruit, and it comes out. Years later, it comes out as this thing. I know we ain't supposed to talk about this in church and all that stuff, but the whole bourbon making and all that, is that not fascinating? Fascinates me. It may not fascinate you, it fascinates me. That I've got enough of enough vision in process that I'm going to put something in a place that is pre-designed, and I'm going to let it incubate for 18 years before it becomes good. We can operate that slow. From a business standpoint, it blows my mind. Because I can't get it on a return on investment that quick, James. I'm sitting there saying, how in the world do I invest my money for 18 years before I ever get a penny out of it? By faith that it's going to be good. By faith that in 18 years I'm going to still be around to receive a profit from it. That by faith in 18 years somebody's actually going to still want it. So I love process. I am learning in life to not only embrace process, but to celebrate process. And in Genesis 1, that's what God was doing. And I'm going to speak about another aspect here in just a minute of this. But He is coming in, and God's, it said that He created light, He spoke light into existence, but when He spoke light into existence, then He saw that it was good. God in His mind's eye, I think He already knew what creation was supposed to look like. What He thought it was going to be look like. So He could have blazed right through it. I mean, if you're God, you can sit here and just say, phew. And it is, right? But what did God do? He went through process. He came in and He first spoke light. I'm not talking about the sun. He didn't create the sun first. He didn't create the stars first. He didn't create the moon first. He did that on day four, according to the King James stuff. He did that on day four. It simply said He spoke light. I believe He opened His mouth and His glory just came out. Because that Hebrew word light right there, it means luminous. It means luminous. Luminous. Kind of like hair white as wool. It's luminous. He just came out, and I believe He opened His mouth and it came out. But then God stopped after He did that, and He looks at it in a way that He can actually see it. He contemplates it. I believe that every one of these steps that as God goes through that in these 6 days of creation, and you know, was a day 1,000 years? Was a day 10,000 years? I don't know. You know, we've got a King James translation that calls it a day, and we come in and think it's a 24-hour period. It might have been a, you know, 2.4 million year period is His day. But He comes in and He speaks this thing, and then He stops and He looks at it. And He contemplates it. And He sees all the different aspects of it. And in looking at it, He knows what it has the capacity to produce. And it says that He saw that it was good. He didn't say it was good, because God can declare anything, but He saw that it was good. Here's the thing that made it good. It was something that was released out of Him. All right? I'm going somewhere with y'all. Hang on. This, I know this is a... We're plowing deep on this word. But He saw that it was good because it was something that came out of Him. But I don't know your story, brother. We hadn't had time to sit down and talk. And, you know, and I like to know what guys' stories are. You know. I know he's from Columbus, and he went to Ole Miss, and he likes to duck hunt, so that ratcheted him up in my book right there, because anybody's a duck hunter, you all right, and all this stuff. He's going to talk about the fowl of the air in a minute, so we know God was a duck hunter too. So you read it right here. He talks about the fowl, you know. Ain't one thing you call fowl, and that's waterfowl, okay? So, I don't know your story and all this stuff, but here, I know where your origin is, and your origin's not sin. We say, brother, we're born with a sin nature. It also says we are created in the image of God. And He breathed His life into us. And so when I look at you from that aspect, you know what I say? It's good. The world will say it's bad. But you know what God says when He looks at it from a contemplative state? He said, that's good right there. And we look at it and we're like, man, I'm junk. And He's like, I like the old thing that we always told our kids, man, God don't make no junk. Y'all, you see, God don't make no junk. You know? But He looks at it and He says, it's good. He looks at it and He sees that it's good. See, there I go again. I fall back into that. He says, He sees that it's good. And I want you to understand that when God sees you, God sees something that's good. We're coming here. Here's a big problem with us, is we're coming in and we've got the mandate to redeem this world that God has put us in. And we're trying to redeem something that we don't like. Because we can't see it as good. We see it as nasty. We see it as corrupt. We see it as bad. We see it as either red or blue. And God sees it as good. I'm glad He looked on me and He saw me as good through the ages of time and said He's worth redeeming. If I was bad, He wouldn't have said I was worth redeeming. But He saw me as good. And I promise you, you will never redeem this planet if you view this planet as bad. You know why we can't reach the Muslim nations? Because we don't like the Muslim nations. We're prejudiced against them. Check yourself. You are. You'll walk through the airport and you'll see somebody wearing all that stuff and you'll be like, mm-hmm. We do. In the South, we were conditioned to be prejudiced against blacks. The blacks are conditioned to be prejudiced against whites. We talk about wanting to redeem stuff that we can't see it as being good. And God said He looked on it in Genesis and He saw that it was good. I want you to start seeing the world out there that it's good. I want you to see people. And I made this statement 1,000 times. People are just jacked up, man. Even church people, they jacked up. People are idiots. They're fools. Man is inherently wicked. The sin curse is inherently wicked, but I'm pretty sure Jesus broke that on Calvary's cross. He put that under His feet. He became sin so that He could absolve us from it. And I will never, ever be able to redeem you or what's going on in your life if I look at you and look at your life and say it's bad. The Lord spoke a word to me down in the altar a few weeks ago, and we were down here and we were talking about redeeming stuff and all that, and I have not fully developed this yet. That's why I hadn't preached it. Just hold on, and when God fully develops this, it is going to be powerful and it's going to be like, whoa, and all of this stuff. But God spoke a word to me, and I told Paul and Wanda when it was through, I was like, man, you know what God just spoke to me? I just got through taking communion. And He said, you can't fully redeem it. You cannot fully redeem it unless you own it. You cannot fully redeem it unless you own it. And He said the reason that Jesus could fully redeem things is because He owned things. And the reason that we don't own things is because we don't deem things worthy of owning. And we have a renter's mindset. And we have a mindset of a disposable society that we come in and we use something and we throw it away. And we use people and we throw them away. We use cultures and we throw them away. We use moments and situations and then we throw them away. And God said, when you begin to see it as good, then you will deem that it is worth owning, it is worth redeeming, it is worth fully investing yourself in. Before you asked Cammie to marry you, you had to see that she was something. You had to see that she was, when I say beautiful, I don't mean physical beauty. She's an attractive woman, but I don't mean physical beauty. You had to see that she was beautiful in who she was before you slipped a ring on that finger. That was something that you had, you know, if she was just some cute girl, you might try to hook up with her, but you ain't going to do that. And we have to see that it's good. And so he comes in this contemplative state, and he stops and he looks at it. And I believe that every aspect of God has all of these facets about it. And we'll see God from this angle, and it's like, whoa. And then we'll come right here, and then we're like, whoa. And then you look right here, and you see a totally different aspect, totally different facet. And that's true with us in our journey in life. Because I looked at her one way when she was 20, and then I look at her another way when she was 35. Now I look at her another way when she's in her, you know, approaching 50. And it's a different thing in a different depth. You love him differently now than you did when he was a baby. And I know he was cute and precious and all of that stuff, and his poop didn't stink or anything like that. Perfect child and everything. You know, now he's Graham. He's a good kid, but he's Graham and all this stuff. But you love him in a different aspect, in a deeper way, because you see him more for who he is than you did back then. You see him now and you see a godly young man. You see that it is good. You don't have to tell everybody it's good. You see it. But here's the thing is, you still see it when he screws up. He's still good. And when we get that revelation that that's the way that God views us, we'll start seeing him in his infinite good nature. We've got God on trial. We keep God on trial. God, are you really good? Do you really love me? Do you really care about me? Do you really care about my problems? Do you really care about my issues? Do you really care about what's going on in my life and all of that? And as long as we keep him on trial on that, then we keep ourselves on trial. Because until I rightly see him, I can't rightly see myself. And until I rightly see him, I'm not going to be able to rightly see Linda Carter or Carolyn or Paul. But when I come in and I see them through the lens of Jesus, then I see that they're good. But you can only do that when you slow down. You can only do that when you slow down. You know what I absolutely love? A 2.5-hour meal. I do. And it's not because I eat more. I just simply love to come in and fully grasp every aspect of it. Not rush through it. Not rush through it. But I'm coming in and this is what we're doing first. And I can appreciate the taste of this and the nuance of that. And I can look at what went into it. And this and this and this. And all these things. I appreciated that meal more than you guys did last night. You tasted the same thing. But I saw something you didn't see. Paul probably appreciated that meal last night more than y'all did, because he spent about 2 or 3 hours in my kitchen with me and Chris and Lori. I saw the process of the meal. And as I saw the process of the meal, I saw the beauty in it. We're talking about what to cook and all that stuff. And barbecue's not fancy or glorious or anything like that. And we're like, well, we can just go buy something. And Lori's like, oh, heck no. And we might get pizza next time, but this time she's like, oh, heck no. Because she wanted some process to be there. Would a pizza fill us up? Yeah. Yeah. It would. It would. And we come in and we fill our lives with all this filler stuff. And we say, I've been to church. And I've sang 3 songs. And I put my money in there. And if I'm doing really good, man, I'm putting a lot of money in there. And I do all of this stuff. And I'm doing the right things. And I'm covering my sin management and all that stuff. And we fail to rightly see. And I'm probably losing track of time. I'm sorry, but I'm just going to roll with it. We got 15 more minutes. And God comes in. And on every bit of this, let me... keep saying the same thing every time. God said, I want to build on this just a second though. God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. I want to throw out an aspect here in this of stopping and slowing down and being contemplative and looking at something. When you look and stop and really see, you know what that does? That sets you up for what's next. This is huge. Everybody's zoning in on me on this. I don't want to lose you in reading the Word and all that stuff. Say, okay, Sid, I got your point. Don't check out the last 15 minutes. Often you can't see what is the proper order of next until you see the proper order of what has just happened. You ever watch somebody paint, a real artist paint? They don't sit here and just go. What do? They do a couple brush strokes and then they'll step back and they'll look at it. And they'll go. And then they'll do this. And they'll step back. And they'll say, that's good, but this is the next step. This is the next phase. An architect does that in their mind's eyes. They come in. They don't come in and just do a sketch and say, this is it. They will come in and they will do step one and they'll be contemplative of that. And they'll look at it. And they'll say, because I have rightly seen this, this is how I know what is next. Now, God made all of these amazing things in 6 days, right? 6,000 years, 6 million years, however long time it appears. But anyway, there were 6 different time segments that He made these. The first thing that He did was make what? Light. He comes in and day three right there I just read. And what did he make? All the plants. What do the plants have to have in order to live? I'm pretty sure if my science is correct from 6th grade, was it photosynthesis? I did learn something. Photosynthesis does not happen without light. So we come in and we can be all random and we can be all abstract in our faith and we want to create plants in our life without any light in our life. And if you create plants before you create light, guess what's not going to grow? Guess what's not going to live? Guess what's not going to thrive? Church wants to come in and we want to do all of these things over here and God said, you hadn't got this right yet. And the reason you hadn't got this right is because you haven't seen things in a proper way. You haven't seen things in a proper order. It's going to take water. It's going to take light. There's got to be a division of the soil. Look at what all he did. The first thing he did was light, the luminous thing. Then he starts dividing earth and seas. He starts dividing it. There comes dry ground. The herbs aren't going to grow without that. They're not going to grow with all of these things. And I think we get the proverbial, the cart ahead of the horse. And we want to come in and we want to achieve all these great things. We want to do all this great stuff. Gordon, you're going to love this. I had a kid come up to me at Sturgis. And I'm sitting there, you know, and it's middle of the afternoon, and we've done been humping it all day and all of this stuff and, you know, just rocking it out day after day after day. And this little kid comes up. He's, you know, when I say little old kid, he's probably 23, 24 years old, something like that. Now, they're kids to me. And, you know, and he comes up and he wants us to put handlebars on his back. And so we are, you know, we roll it in, dude, and we'll take care of it, you know. Give me your $700 and I'll hook you up and all of that stuff and everything. And you know, it's me and Brett and Jake and Rhett. You know, we're getting in. He's kind of surveying a little bit. And he said, you the boss? I guess I'm the old dog there, so he assumes. He said, you the boss? I said, yeah, I own the company. He said, that's what I want to be. Just the way he said, that's what I want to be. I'm going to be the boss. I want to own it and all that stuff. You know, and of course that didn't go well. It was about like a, you know, about like a turd in a bathtub with me, you know. I'm just like, I said, let me tell you something. I said, I've been doing this for 35 years. I have worked 50 hours a week for 35 years. When I started this company, I gutted every penny that me and my wife had, and I put it into this company, and I poured it into it. And we went out there on faith, and we busted our rear end, and suddenly, I threw a Bill Johnson on him. I said, and suddenly, it doesn't just happen, son. I was kind of giving him a daddy lecture right there. I wasn't mean, I wasn't aggressive. But I wanted him to know that in the context of what we're talking about tonight, plants don't grow unless you have light. Plants don't grow unless you have soil. Plants don't grow unless you have water. And there are things that we have to get in our life in order to reach that expected end. We've all got a vision of what it's going to look like. But we're not going to get, the Word says to walk circumspectly on this thing. I know it talks about walking circumspectly because we're avoiding dangers, we're avoiding pitfalls, we're avoiding all this. But sometimes it's just seeing what's next. And I can't look and see what is supposed to come next in the proper order until I take the time to see what just happened. Good or bad. Go to Jeremiah 18 and the vision in the potter's house. And you know what the potter's doing? He's coming in and God's the potter in this. And he's got that thing on. Have you ever watched anybody do pottery? You know what they do? They work it and they gouge it and all that, but they stop and they look at it. It wouldn't be a hard stretch for him, but you know, if I went to Seth for a haircut, you know what he's going to do? He's going to come in and he's going to snip a little bit and he's going to step back. And it ain't hard for me. You know, you just number two guard and you're done. But if he was doing somebody that really had some hair, if he was doing Brett Kent, he'd be coming in and he wouldn't just like, he would do a little bit and he'd step back and look and see what he had just done in order to know what he needed to do next. And I want you guys as Christians to get this and understand this, that if we will stop, slow down in a contemplative state, and look, and we'll see successes, we'll see failures, but we'll see God in the midst of it all, and we will see that it is good. I look back on my journey, and you know what I can say about every bit of my journey? It was good. Every bit, it was good. Every bit, it was good. It was good. It was good. Can't you declare that? Can't you declare that? So I see God doing this on every stage. If you can't slow down enough to see what God's doing in your children's life, then how are you going to steward what's next in them? I remind James all the time of what God's doing in his kids. He gets it. He sees it. I don't have to enlighten him. He sees it. But I want to come in and reaffirm it and confirm it with him. I come in all the time. I'm like, dude, your kids is messing me up. Dude, you got awesome kids. If you see the way God's growing them and maturing them and all of this stuff, you know. And I say that all the time to him because I want to tell you something, guys. In order for him to properly parent and steward what's next in their life, he has to properly see what God's doing in their life right now. And the only way you can do that is to slow down and to look and to see. And to look and to see. I want to read one more thing to you and then I'll be done. Let's jump down to verse 28. Everybody look at verse 28. I'm going to read about three verses. In verses 26 and 27, God made man in His image. And God blessed them in verse 28. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And every beast of the earth, and every fowl of the air, and everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. Verse 31, this is where I want to finish tonight. And God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. And then it talks about His sanctification, and His blessing of the seventh day, and the rest in the seventh day. But I want to throw something out here in verse 31. There is a differentiation of what God says in verse 30, or what God saw in verse 31. See, I keep going back to what He said. What God saw in verse 31 and what God saw in the previous 30 verses. God came in. In all of these different stages and all of these different aspects, and He saw that it was good. But when He came in verse 31, after creation was complete, and after everything was in proper order, and He said, that's very good. Did the birds look different? No. Not a trick question. Did the light look different in verse 31? No. Did the plants look different? No. It looked just like it did in the previous. What was the thing that caused it to become exponential? And He said, not only is it good, but He saw that it was very good. There's a differentiation right there. It was good in the first 30 verses, but when He comes to verse 31 and everything has come, and a culmination of a networking together and a coming together and in the proper order. Because He came and He told Adam, He said, it's meat for you. The herb, it's meat for you. The fowl, it's meat for you. The meat, it's meat for you. All of these things are under your authority. All of these things are under your domain. All these things are under your governorship. You know, dare to be so bold as to say your lordship. When all of these things are in proper order, then it takes a hyper jump from being good to being very good. And I want to tell you something, guys. You know what our goal is? To be in such a place of glory, to be in such a place of His beauty, to be in such a place of His hand moving in us and through us and on us, being such a place of Him establishing the proper order, that we stop going through life and saying it's good. Instead, start seeing that it's very good. You know what's going to catch the world's eye? Good's awesome. Good's awesome. Y'all heard me say this for years, that good's the worst enemy of best. I don't want to settle for one part being good when the totality is supposed to be very good. I want my life to be such that you can't look at me without looking at the totality of it. That you can't look at me without looking at my children. You can't look at me without looking at my grandchildren. You can't look at me without looking at the artisan that I desire to be. You can't look at me without looking at the farm that God's called me to have domain over. You can't look at me without looking at all of the things that are under, supposed to be under my redemptive power, I know that messes with some people because you just want to be a little small spot on the stick. We had a woman one time when I was pastoring the Baptist church, and she didn't want us to address anything about the devil or demonic, because she said, I don't want to get his attention. I said, honey, you already got his attention. He already knows your address. So the best thing you can do is learn to be righteous and stand in his face and get him under your feet. And I want our life to stop being so compartmentalized that we look at one area and say, man, he got it. And here's what we want to do, man, is we want to come in and we say, I just want to be good at this. I don't. I want you to look at my life. This is not an egotist thing, man, because I don't care about being famous, but I want people to be able to look at my life from this angle right here and see God's kiss on it. And I want them to be able to come over here and look at it from right here and see God's kiss on it. I want my grandchildren's playmates. I want their playmates to be able to look at my life from their perspective and see God's kiss on it. That's why they call her Gigi. That's why all them little kids are around. They don't know her name. They don't even call her Sydney Hannah. They just call, you know, her grandmom or anything. They say, that's Gigi. They'll come, we'll go to a gymnastics event. They'll come jump in her lap. Because from their perspective, it's very good. That's what I aspire to. James, they look at our business from that perspective, and they see God's kiss on it. Not that we're sharp. We work hard. We try hard. But dude, it's God's kiss on it.
All of it together. He's looking at everything that was good individually, but he's looking at it together. And so many times we look at things either good or bad, in the midst of something, you have a rough day, and you think, man, this is just tough. This is all I'm doing is looking at one day of it. I'm looking at a snapshot of it. But God wants us so many times, like what you're saying, is just to back away from it and look at the whole thing. Look at your life in its whole. Don't look at maybe the struggle that you're going through right now. If he just focused on the foul, and that's all he focused on, I mean, yeah, this is good, this is cool, those are, you know, feathered things that fly around, that's cool. But there was more to it than that. There's more to it than what we're walking through today, good or bad. You know, he wants us to look at the whole thing. And when we do that, I think that's where that proper perspective comes. I think people that struggle with depression, it's a very, very real thing. But I think one thing that leads into that is that focus on those bad things, that focus on that ugly foul or whatever it is that you're focused on. And it's that almost, and Satan almost keeps you from backing away and looking at that full deal. Like, wait a minute, my life is not as bad as I feel like it is right now. You know, my life is blessed. My life is, look at what God's done. Look at this good. And when you see the whole picture, you know, as a parent, if you focus in on that one day where it was a bad day, it was a rough day, and you fought with your kids and everything else, like, man, parenting stinks. But then when you look back on the whole picture, and I think I feel like that's what you're kind of driving home here, is that, it's good, but it's very good when we look at the whole thing. It's very good when we put it all in a perspective. These struggles that we go through daily and this day and that day, man, you know, back away from it. And what is that struggle? The struggles we took with our business. There was days we were ready to hang it up. We weren't too far, so just put a lock on the door and say, you know what, we got to figure something else out. But when you look back, that's almost a beautiful time, because you're like, wow, God was with us in that time. How beautiful. Now, we weren't calling it beautiful then. We were calling it ugly. Let's burn this place down, see if we can get some insurance money out of it. That's part of the process. Exactly. The process itself is a beautiful thing. It's not easy, but it's a beautiful thing.
You can't fully appreciate the results until you go through some of that process when it's hard and you don't want to keep doing it. But, you know, God is faithful, and that's why we have to keep our eyes focused on Him.
A big part of our job, the Word says they overcame by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. A big part of my job on the other side of process is to encourage everybody that is in the middle of process. And they're like, bull mess, this ain't glorious. And I say, it is. I promise you, it is. I always, you know, I got a little thing I'll always throw out there, this too shall pass. Somebody going through, I say, this too shall pass. Kids freaking, this too shall pass. But part of, we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. And you know what part of that is? That's us coming in, and every one of you guys have that capacity. Every one of you guys have that capacity that you can come in and you can say, I know the process stinks, but it's glorious. I know it's hard, but it's beautiful. Because I see what it brings. I know what it brings because it brought it in my life. It's not a thing where we brag, we encourage. We brag on God. You know, Chris got up here last night, man, and he just beautiful. Y'all listen to it on podcast. If you haven't listened to it, listen on podcast. It's cool. And he's a cool story. Cool story. Because he's been through ups and downs and highs and lows. The point where he was ready to throw in the towel on his marriage and all that stuff. But he comes in and he's like, the process is beautiful and the process is glorious. So I hope everybody that comes out, these young guys that come in behind him, you know, I want to tell everybody, anybody that's got an entrepreneurial spirit in here, man, the process is glorious. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Our faith is not to be endured. It's beautiful. The world doesn't suck. Let's get to heaven. It's beautiful. God's creation, it's beautiful. Whether they're Hindus or they're Muslims or they're Buddhist or atheist or agnostic. I'm not saying they don't need Jesus. They need Jesus. But if I hate them, I can't redeem them. If I view them as less than me, I can't redeem them. Because I want to tell you something. But for the grace of God, if I was born in Iraq, you know what I probably would have been? I'd have probably been a hardcore jihadist too. But for the grace of God. I know you would, brother. You'd be one of them suicide bombers and say, yeah, bring on the afterlife. Because you're passionate and you're hardcore in what you believe. I just gotta show them the beauty of Jesus. Or say, man, this thing's a thing of hate and that thing's a thing of beauty. That's a thing of love. So that's what I'm trying to get with us tonight, guys. Everybody, did this hit home with anybody tonight? Y'all seeing some of this? Y'all seeing some of this? It's powerful, man. Slow down and stop and look. In a contemplative, I keep using this word, in a contemplative state. In a contemplative state. You can't do it doing 100 mile an hour. You can't do it glancing at it playing Candy Crush. Come on. You can't do it glancing at it living being addicted to Facebook or Instagram. You can't do it being addicted to ESPN or even the outdoor channel, as glorious as it is. You can't. You can't. Let's stand to our feet. I was encouraging a brother the other day. Just trying to encourage him in his faith, encourage him in his calling. And he says, man, thank you so much for just always believing the best in people. And I'm like, man, I don't always believe the best in the people, but when I look at them through the lens of Jesus, I do. In that moment, I was looking at him through the lens of Jesus. Linda, when I, You know what this is? This is symbolic, but you know what this is? He says, eat my flesh and drink my blood. And when I lose myself in Him, when I lose myself in Him, that's when I see through His lens. And when I see through His lens, it's good. And when it gets properly aligned and it all comes together, then it takes a hyper jump and it becomes very good. That's this community, that's what we're supposed to be. But the world looks at it and they're like, man, I know Sharon Stanford's jacked up. It's just good. I know Jacob Harper, I went to school with him, but man, it's good. I see God's kiss on his life. I see God's kindness. Chris has never met him until yesterday and when he was leaving last night. I bet he said it 10 times when we were standing in the parking lot. He said, man, I just see a kindness on you. He said, I see a kindness on you. He was almost embarrassed to say it because it sounds kind of, you know, a little mushy with guys. I see kindness on you, you know. That's not the words that would come out of Gordon, but it's the words that would come out of Jesus in Gordon. Yeah. That's right. And he just kept saying that. But you know what it was doing? He was seeing him through the lens of Jesus. And you know what he said? It was good. He saw that it was good. He wasn't declaring it. He saw that it was good. When they come through these doors Sunday, in their spirit and in their heart, they ain't got to love our music. They may not like my preaching, but I want them to see God's kiss on a bunch of flawed people, on a bunch of jacked up people. Man, I look around, we ought to be a bunch of convicts. For real. Every one of us is jacked up in some way or another. But when you come in and you see God's kiss, and it just is, it's good. And it feels good. And it's deep calling out to deep. Man. Father God, just wash us in that. Wash us in You. Let us just get lost in You and You in us. Lord, in the Word You say, You said, if you've seen Me, you've seen the Father. You are so lost in Him. Word talks about the two shall become one. Lord, I don't want that just to be husband and wife. But it's You and I. Your Spirit in us, intertwined in us. Give us hunger and passion and desire for more of that and for more of You. Let us rightly see the beauty. The Word says that Your goodness will draw men to You. Not fear, not judgment, but Your goodness. And I don't believe that means gifts, Father. I think it means the beauty of Your goodness and who You are. Father, let them see it in us. Let them see it in us. Lord, I just pray You just touch and move over this company of believers. Just bless, stir, and draw. Just woo us, court us, Father. Court us. Let our gaze be captured by Your beauty. By Your beauty. Oh, Lord. We just thank You for who You are, and we thank You for this evening. It's in Jesus' sweet name I ask these things. Man, And the altar's open if you need to come to the altar, and encourage you to come and take communion. And just spend a little bit of time with Him.